You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me for our Wednesday show, my co-host in crime, Rob Rang. Glad to have you listening in, whether this is your first time listening to Locked On Seahawks or you're a regular listener. Glad to have you on board. We've got a jam-packed episode coming your way, including catching up with our good friend Brian Peacock of Locked On 49ers. The Seahawks just can't stop signing 49ers players, so we keep having to bring him back onto the show. Looking forward to it. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. When the Seahawks acquired Carlos Dunlap from the Bengals in a midseason trade last October, Dunlap knew that there was a chance that he was going to be hitting the free agent market in March. But he made it clear the Seahawks were transparent about that when they made the trade, that, look, we're going to move some of your money to a signing bonus. You're going to have a large cap hit next year. We may not be able to afford that depending on what the salary cap ends up being after a season without fans in attendance. Sure enough, the Seahawks did release him in early March, but just 2 weeks later, able to re-sign him on a two-year deal, and Dunlap could not be happier. I know Seahawks fans couldn't be happier that the veteran pass rusher is coming back.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was one of the real big pleasant surprises of the offseason, and what has made this such a pleasant offseason after so much talk that it was going to be, you know, the sky is falling and all that, is the fact that Seattle was able to bring Carlos Dunlap back. Because, you know, we talked about it once Seattle pulled off the trade for Dunlap, that you're talking about a real ace here. I mean, this is a legitimate difference-making pass rusher that's not just one of these guys who's 240 pounds and is going to be a liability against the run. This is a guy who is a difference maker as far as a pass rusher. He can get his hands up and be able to knock down some passes, which is critical when you're talking about some of the quarterbacks that are in the division. And then, of course, he's a good run stuffer as well. I mean, he is just a big, long guy who has been a difference maker basically ever since he stepped onto the field in the NFL after a spectacular career at the University of Florida. And so, to me, that is one of the most important re-signings, as it turns out, by the Seahawks so far in this offseason, is bringing back Carlos Dunlap. To me, because of that, it's just made this defense that much better.
Yeah, you look at what happened after Dunlap arrived. The Seahawks had more sacks as a team over the final nine games of the season than anyone else in the NFL. Dunlap had five of those. He had 14 quarterback hits. So obviously, he himself played a big part in that. But we saw what happened with Jaron Reed and his production. Benson Mayoa had four sacks in the final six or seven games down the stretch. A couple of the young guys like Alton Robinson picked up their pass rushing ability. Puna Ford really was on fire towards the end of the season. It really just rubbed off on everyone. And I asked Dunlap about this yesterday, the loss of Jaron Reed, how do you offset that? And I even asked him about the possibility of Geno Atkins, his former teammate in Cincinnati, who is still a free agent, potentially coming back. And he said, while that would be very dope to have Atkins back next to him and play together again, he believes in the group that they have returning. And this fits with what we've talked about a few times already in the last couple of weeks. Even without Jaron Reed, there is a lot of talent on this defensive line. He name dropped Puna Ford, his contract extension that he just received. He's ready to continue improving in 2021 with a couple more years added to his contract. They brought in Kerry Hyder, Al Woods, a number of key players returning, such as LJ Collier, Rasheem Green. And so this is a defensive line that if everybody plays up their potential, and as far as Dunlap's concerned, last year was just scratching the surface on what this group can do. If that's really the case, then 12 should be really excited about what this defensive line can do and how that overall impacts the rest of the defense. Because we saw the secondary play much better in the second half. When you're a corner or safety in this league, life's much easier when your front line is able to get pressure on the opposing quarterback. You don't have to cover guys as long, and we could see the dominoes fall. Once that defensive line was playing better with Carlos Dunlap in town, the linebackers were already playing well. Now your secondary gets healthy. They're playing their best football, and that's why this defense gave up less than 15 points per game over their final eight games in the regular season.
It is. I mean, that's the thing. It's like we've talked before about how, you know, kind of just playing on words with, you know, let Russ cook kind of idea. But Chris Carson is the one that kind of sets the table. With Carlos Dunlap, he's the one that kind of – he's the straw that stirs the drink kind of a thing. I mean, he really was the impetus that got the rest of Seattle's defensive line really going, and I think was the big spark that turned their defense around last season. And, of course, that was only half of a year when Carlos Dunlap wasn't healthy the entire season. So if you extrapolate his numbers over an entire season, considering the fact that you're going to have a slower-footed, traditional drop-back quarterback in Matthew Stafford now with the Rams, you're potentially going to have a rookie quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers. I'm excited to talk to Brian Peacock about that in just a couple of moments. And so I just think that it's very likely that Carlos Dunlap's numbers are going to absolutely skyrocket in year two in Seattle. And one of the reasons why he was so excited, and one of the things I took out of his press conference yesterday, is just the fact that he had a little bit more comfort in re-signing with Seattle because he had the personal interaction with Russell Wilson to led him to believe that Russell Wilson is all in on returning to Seattle as well. And so to me, this all kind of comes back to the idea that the Seattle is building up their culture for another run. And I don't know that the Seattle Seahawks fans had any optimism that was going to be the case when the offseason began.
That really was the biggest storyline coming out of this press conference. Is this is just the latest player that had said that he spoke with Russell Wilson, and he said this wasn't word for word, but he told me he's here to stay. And of course, that created a bunch of headlines, a bunch of stories. And we've seen in the last 24 hours a number of big name media people and former players at that. Brandon Marshall is an example, coming out and changing their tune a little bit about Russell Wilson's relationship with the Seahawks. It's funny how that works. So everything, at least for now, seems to be trending in the right direction from Dunlap's standpoint. You could tell he was really excited to join the Seahawks. He enjoyed his short stint with the team last year. He loves the culture they have in Seattle. He really appreciated the transparency that they had with him as a player, telling him, hey, there's a chance that we're going to release you, but we're going to do everything we can to re-sign you. That's ultimately what happened. And so it's a good fit for the team, good fit for the player, and really a great fit for all of his teammates along that defensive line for a unit that at one point was a weakness and should be a big strength for the Seahawks in 2021. When we return for the second quarter, speaking of that defensive line, we're going to talk about one of Seattle's newest additions, Kerry Hyder, and we're going to discuss the player from a source that knows him pretty darn well. Brian Peacock of Locked On 49ers got to watch Hyder record a career high in sacks last year for San Francisco. We'll catch up with our good friend Brian here after the break. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Are you looking for a way to boost your workout game? Are you seeking a delicious protein bar without the sugar and carbs? Enter in the Built Bar, 18 amazing flavors, including nut and non-nut flavors. Some of the best ones, caramel brownie, cookies and cream, apple almond crisp, peanut butter, double chocolate. You're going to have a tough time eating just one. These bars are covered in 100% chocolate, soft, easy to chew. It's great for the health conscious guy. Lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. Bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, and they're great for a keto diet. Remember to use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your order. Welcome back, 12s. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. This is your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Rob Rang. It feels like it hasn't been that long. Oh, wait, it hasn't been that long since we pestered our good friend Brian Peacock of Locked On 49ers. Brian, the Seahawks just won't stop signing former 49ers players. So we've had to keep calling upon you to ask about a few of these players. We're going to talk a lot about Kerry Hyder on today's segment. We already discussed Akella Witherspoon earlier. But before we talk Hyder, I've got to ask you this question first and foremost. What are the 49ers going to do with pick number 3? And how surprised were you that they made that bold of a move, moving that far up into the first round?
I have no idea. I'm hearing too many things from too many places about what the 49ers might do with that pick, but it was shocking. I didn't think they had that just desire, that need to get up for that quarterback at number 3. So I think it's pretty clear they were probably talking with the Texans or wanted to give up a big package for maybe Deshaun Watson. That's out the door now. So they thought, you know, let's just go up and get the best quarterback we can in the draft. And I know what the whispers are out there. I know what a lot of the folks that are plugged in are saying. I'm still not buying it that it's Mac Jones. I think they're going higher upside in the draft. That's just the way I got to believe. I cannot fathom that they would have gone up spending ultimately four draft picks to get to number three to draft Mac Jones. I just can't see that happening. My brain does not allow me to comprehend that. I think they're going high-end traits. I think Kyle Shanahan wants to have some fun, and he wants to have a quarterback that, if he does hit his ceiling, is a top five quarterback in the NFL. And I see a prospect out there. I don't know if you guys agree with me and if you've looked at the quarterbacks a lot, but I see a prospect out there that reminds me a lot of a little bit of a taller, faster version of Russell Wilson, which I know is blasphemy for you guys to hear somebody say that, but I see a lot of that, and I think I can see the former baseball player in Justin Fields. I think that's who the pick is going to be.
Yeah, on my end, Brian, Russell Wilson was actually the player that I compared Justin Fields to when I first started doing the evaluation of him over the summer. Now, you know, that was one of the things that, of course, Wilson is become known as one of the more accurate deep ball throwers in the game. And Fields has the great touch on the deep ball, but it's the mobility, whereas Russell Wilson is, he has the agility. He can make people miss. He's got kind of the eyes in the back of his head. He's not going to run over defenders, you know, as a runner, but Justin Fields does do that, but the same type of upside, the same type of toughness. There's a lot of the traits about the two of them I think are similar, and I agree. I mean, we're hearing all the same kind of buzz that there might be Mac Jones number three overall. And I, you know, after watching all of his tape, and I literally watched every single throw, every single run that he did at Alabama a year ago, I do think that he's going to be a successful NFL quarterback. I think he's going to be a top 10 pick. I would agree with you. I think that when you make a bold move up like that, then usually you're going for the quarterback who has the higher upside. And I agree. I think that Justin Fields has a higher upside. I think that Trey Lance, North Dakota State, has a higher upside. I went into the process not thinking I was going to like, Mac Jones as much as I did. And so I understand the hype. I understand how he's viewed as pro ready. But yeah, I was definitely surprised by the 49ers' bold move and all the talk that the object of their affection is Mac Jones. I had to wait to see it to believe it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Trey Lance should also be somebody that we're talking about with that pick, and obviously because of his traits and his height and weight. And he actually, played from under center, and they actually employed a fullback at North Dakota State. But, the small school thing 2 years ago, it's going to be, and they're talking about, you need to sit Trey Lance for a year or two. So you're talking about a guy who's played one game since 2019 and might not actually take a field until 2022. Just so much projection there. So that's why every road, despite what we're hearing and some whispers out there, every road leads me to Justin Fields as the pick for the 49ers. So I think we're on the same page there. I'm glad to hear you say that you saw some Russell Wilson in him too, because that was the first thing that jumped out to me.
Let's talk Kerry Hyder here. What an interesting career he's had since he got into the league as an undrafted free agent out of Texas Tech. He's had some injuries, had a few years where he's been a backup, but he's also had 2 years with at least 8 sacks, and one of them was last year. How important was his emergence with Bosa and Solomon Thomas both getting hurt, season-ending injuries, just guys dropping like flies? How critical was it for him to emerge as a guy that was a viable pass rusher for San Francisco last year?
It was really important. Kerry Hyder saved the 49ers defensive line in a lot of ways because they were up against it. And I think they were probably surprised what they were able to get out of the veteran there. And he led the team in pressures, led the team in sacks by a lot. I think the next closest was Eric Armstead with 3 sacks, and Kerry Hyder had 8.5. So it was really important, and they got a lot out of Kerry Hyder. And he's a try-hard player. He's like the bad body type of player where it's like you see him, he's like, is that an interior defensive lineman? Is it a defensive end? I don't even know. But he keeps coming and he keeps coming, and the coaching staff loves him. And obviously his old defensive line coach from Detroit, Chris Kocurek, is probably the reason the 49ers signed him in the first place. And, it's not surprising that he had his other best year of his career with Chris Kocurek there in Detroit. So he's a fun player to root for. I don't know. I think he's perfect for what the 49ers needed, in that you have a player that you pay like a backup and you expect to give you some backup snaps that can maybe be more, rather than paying him to be a starter and then find out maybe he should have been a backup all along. But he has had some really high-level seasons with a lot of production, and last year was absolutely one of those and really saved the 49ers defensive line.
That's a really good point. And I appreciate that kind of perspective. That's what I'd ask you to kind of think about. I mean, were there certain teams, besides just the statistics, were there certain types of offensive linemen that you saw Hyder have his greatest success or his greatest struggles against?
No, I didn't notice that so much from who he was beating. I just noticed that he was always coming, and he doesn't always beat the guy with his first move or whatever. He just keeps coming, and I think it really benefits him to play in Chris Kocurek's defense. So the one thing I will say is, unfortunately for the Seahawks, they can't hire Chris Kocurek to be the defensive line coach, because that's where his best seasons have come from. And in fact, he's had 16 and a half sacks in two seasons, one in – was it 2016 with Detroit with Chris Kocurek as the defensive line coach there, and then the one last year with the 49ers. He's only had two combined sacks the rest of his entire career for three or four seasons. So he has had some injuries. I would say that his number one trait, though, is he keeps coming, and his motor, which is something that's probably really overlooked for a trait that you really need in a good pass rusher, too, because not every pass rusher wins beautiful like they do in the college level once they get to the NFL. You got to keep coming, and Kerry Hyder absolutely does. And he's a pretty good run defender, too, just because he's built that way as a defensive end.
I think the Seahawks are going to be excited about teaming him up with Clint Hurt. I know that he's had a lot of success with the other aforementioned defensive line coach, but Clint Hurt's got a pretty good track record that he's building in Seattle as well. And this has been the Seahawks' MO the entire time Pete Carroll's been there. They want base five-tech defensive ends that can also play inside. And so Kerry Hyder can do that. He also has incredible hand technique. That's the thing watching his film that just blew me away is – he just has that ability, no wasted motion, but he really knows how to use his hands, and that offsets whatever athletic deficiencies he has. But looking at how he performed with the 49ers last year, talking strengths versus weaknesses, what are the few weaknesses that you can outline in his game that maybe would make you hesitant to think that he's going to be able to replicate the production he had a year ago? And what are some realistic expectations that maybe Seahawks fans should have going into 2021?
I would say weaknesses, and you kind of outlined it there. You know, he's a try-hard guy. He's worked on his technique, and he's going to keep coming. But the obvious weakness is he's 6'2", 270, and doesn't really fit that perfect mold, doesn't have a ton of length, and he's not going to beat guys with speed. He's not really going to beat people with power too often, although he's a pretty sturdy guy for putting him at defensive end. If you're asking him to do some interior defensive line stuff, then maybe his quickness plays up a little bit, but his power won't play up as much. So you can mix and match him, and he's versatile, and I think he's a nice player to rotate in a defensive line. I think just the number one shortcoming would be if you are expecting this full-time, you know, 8.5 to 10 sack player every year as a pure defensive end. I don't know if he's going to give you that. I think it was a perfect storm of events for him to produce like he did last year, although he's done it twice now in his career and had very productive seasons. Expecting a starting caliber defensive end is, I think, something that you should not expect. And I think you might be disappointed in the end if you're paying him like that. If you're expecting just a rotational guy who's going to be a backup and give you some solid snaps and can come in there and fill in when the guy that is your number one pass rusher is hurt or out of the game, then I think you'll be really happy with Kerry Hyder. And he's a good teammate, and he's going to give you quality snaps. He's just not going to really ever blow you away.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if he necessarily is getting starter money when you look at what the Seahawks paid him. It's a little over $6 million for 2 years, and the third year is a voided year. So I think the impression's been he's going to be the guy over there at base defensive end, but they still have LJ Collier. They like to rotate guys in. So it might be one of those things they pick a starter, but they split up snaps. So who knows how that's going to play out. But as always, Brian, we greatly appreciate the chance to catch up with you on the 49ers, and we'll be waiting, seeing what happens with that number three pick as NFC West adversaries. And, you know, who knows? Maybe we're pulling for the 49ers to pick Mac Jones instead of Justin Fields. We don't really want the next Russell Wilson in the division.
That's a common thing that I'm hearing is people are saying, well, what do you think the other teams in want the 49ers to do in the draft? And every time it's like, yeah, Mac Jones. So I'm hearing it from you guys. And it's like, that's the thing. It's much scarier to have what Justin Fields could become, or even what Trey Lance could become as a 49ers quarterback if you're going up against him. And look, even if the realistic ceiling for Mac Jones, he's probably still QB4 in the division, right? Even if he's pretty good, because how high of a ceiling do you think he will achieve? He would have to be this stone cold killer of a quarterback, of a Drew Brees, Tom Brady type mold. It's just really hard to project that from a guy.
As always, Brian, we greatly appreciate it, man. Hopefully, we'll see. Maybe the Seahawks will sign another 49er here in the near future. It seems like there's one every single week. And the 49ers like Seahawks players, too. So we might have to be on your show at some point as well. As always, we appreciate it, man.
Absolutely. I will come calling if the Niners sign one of those ex-Seahawks. Appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, Brian.
Take care, good sir. When we return from the break, we're going to continue our draft prospect countdown. We're going to be looking today at edge rushers, which players the Seahawks could consider in the second, fourth, and seventh rounds. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Bet Online is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and NHL are in full swing. Bet Online even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. Bet Online has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back, 12s. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. This is your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Rob Rang. The NFL draft is weeks away. It's time to start following our Locked On NFL draft duo. The Draft Dudes podcast watches every prospect so that you don't have to. And the Locked On NFL draft podcast is your daily news and mock draft podcast. Follow Locked On NFL Draft and Draft Dudes on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. As we've been talking throughout this show, it has been a very defensive line-centric show. Carlos Dunlap's back in town. The Seahawks also re-signed Benson Mayoa. They added Kerry Hyder as a free agent coming over from the 49ers. They've got a bunch of other players returning, including Daryl Taylor, who didn't get to play a snap during his rookie season. This is a very talented defensive line with a good mix of youth and experience. Nonetheless, we have seen John Schneider over the years. Maybe it's not a need right now for them to get an edge rusher, but if the right player is present with one of their three selections, including in the second round, the Seahawks may be more than willing to pick the best player available and add another pass rusher to the mix. In this league, you can never have too many rushers.
No, exactly. That's the thing. I mean, I don't think there were many of us that were anticipating that Seattle would take an outside linebacker a year ago, but with KJ Wright still basically twisting in the wind right now, that looks like that's the direction, and that Seattle looks very savvy in making that move. I think there's a lot of people who are arguing that Seattle might be taking the same kind of strategy and going for a developmental offensive tackle this year, or, you know, different positions like that. But I think that when you look at the way that the NFL is, Corbin, and just how pass happy the league has become, then the more pass rushers, the better. And I think that any team that gambles too much on a player who missed their entire rookie season the way that Daryl Taylor did a year ago is banking on a player like a Carlos Dunlap or on a Kerry Hyder, who are both a little bit long in the tooth. Then, yeah, if you have an absolute superstar talent fall into your lap at number 56 overall, even though we know that John Schneider is going to be just chomping at the bit to trade away that selection, if there is a player like a Penn State's Jason Owe, for example, that happens to fall in their lap at number 56, then, yeah, I think that you have to make that consideration. At the same time, I think there is no way that Owe is going to be available at that spot just because he is such a big, lanky, absolute freak of an athlete. Now, he had zero sacks a year ago, but at 6'5", 257 pounds, ran a 4.36 40-yard dash, and a 39.5-inch vertical jump, 11-foot, 2-inch broad jump. We're talking about one of the truly freak athletes of this entire draft process. He is just scratching the surface of his potential, and you know that you have one of the better defensive line coaches in all the league, or at least the Seahawks believe they do, in Clint Hurt. Then, yeah, if he is somehow available to them, then I think that's got to be one of the guys that they would think about. Now, being a little bit more realistic, I think there's going to be another pass rusher that might be available to Seattle at number 56 that also had zero sacks, but that's because Joe Tryon from the University of Washington didn't play last year. But at the same time, he also has that type of real twitchy athleticism. He's got the length that they love. He is exactly the type of player you would love to have groom under a player like a Carlos Dunlap. So to me, those are two pass rushers, two edge rushers that would make a lot of sense if Seattle indeed stand pat at number 56 overall.
And we've had this discussion with a few other players that opted out of the 2020 season. I don't think a team like the Seahawks, especially when you consider the workout that Joe Tryon had at Washington's Pro Day, I don't think that they would hesitate in a split second to draft a player like this. The idea of Carlos Dunlap being his mentor for a year or two is really exciting. Now, you did just invest a second round pick in Daryl Taylor, so that's the caveat here. If you pick another defensive end this early, that might be a signal you're saying, we're not sure if Daryl Taylor is going to be able to live up to that draft billing, or maybe they'll put him at Sam linebackers we've talked about. There is some positional flexibility with Daryl Taylor. I really like Tryon. I think at pick 56, he would be a player that's about the right spot to draft him. Again, this is not a major need for Seattle based on their other moves that they have made in free agency. But the other defensive end at 56 that I would at least consider if he's still there, I don't know if he's there by this point because he's had an outstanding offseason, had a great pro day, and he was extremely productive. Carlos Basham Jr. out of Wake Forest, really good week at the Senior Bowl as well. Big-bodied guy that doesn't look like he would be a great athlete. And he's not the twitchy athlete that Joe Tryon is, but this guy is a heck of a pass rusher. He had 10 sacks 2 years ago, and this year he had just 5 of them in just 6 games. So he knows how to get after the quarterback, and he took over some games for the Demon Deacons. They like those bigger-bodied guys that can move around the defensive line, and you add the pass rushing element to it, that might be a player that's intriguing at pick 56. But I think you and I would both agree, if they're going to pick a defensive end, a pass rusher, it's probably going to be one of their last two picks. So let's talk fourth rounders now. This is not a great class for edge rushers, at least in my opinion. Maybe you disagree, but I just don't think there's a lot of depth. And when you look at the player to the top, there's a handful of guys probably that have first, second, third round grades. There's a lot of players that I would cluster into that fourth, fifth round range that are going to be early day three. And one of them that's going to be right in the mix there, third round to fourth round range, is Ellerson Smith out of Northern Iowa. As we've discussed, Seattle typically doesn't like small school players. They like players that played in the Power Five conferences, and they've been leaning more that way in recent years. It's been now since 2017 is the last time they picked a player that was below the FBS level, when they picked David Moore out of East Central Oklahoma. But Ellerson Smith is 6'6", 262 pounds, and you don't want to draft guys just based on their pro day performance, but goodness, 4.69 40-yard dash, 41.5-inch vertical jump. And for those people who say, well, it was a pro day workout, maybe that's not accurate. A vertical jump is going to be accurate. It's different than a 40-yard dash with a stopwatch. So this dude is explosive. He had a 7-second three-cone drill at 262 pounds. So he's not only fast, he's got great agility and change of direction skills. And I don't care that he was playing against FCS competition. He had 14 sacks the last year that he played in 2019. Northern Iowa didn't have its season until this spring because of COVID. So he hasn't played since the 2019 season. But he's in phenomenal shape, as he showed at his workout. A guy that could maybe play Sam linebacker because of how fluid of an athlete that he is. Think Bruce Irvin, how the Seahawks used him at that position. I see a lot of intrigue. If he's there in the fourth round, that's the kind of player that I think John Snyder might be saying, I'm going to draft a year early for a player that can come in, maybe contribute some as a rookie, but he's absolutely going to develop into a cornerstone. Maybe the Sam spot, maybe the Leo position. He gives you a lot of positional versatility.
He does. And you just talked about all the athletic ability that he showed during his pro day workout. I mean, very similar to the athletic ability we talked about before with Tryon and with Owe. And so that's something the Seahawks have done so much in the past, is gamble with these guys who have that elite upside. And so I'll mention a couple of others in the mid-round range that I think that might be available to Seattle that also have that kind of positional versatility. And one guy I'm really intrigued by is Charles Snowden from the University of Virginia. 6'6", 240 pounds. And so because of that long, lean build, and because that he was used as an outside edge rusher in Bronco Mendenhall's scheme, that played some 4-3, played some 3-4, similar to what Daryl Taylor did previously at Tennessee a year ago or 2 years ago, you would expect that he would be just an explosive edge rusher. He's actually, for 6'6", 240, he's actually really mobile, really agile in coverage. Some of his better plays are when he's actually dropping back on tape. And so to me, he also has that same kind of ability of being able to be that edge rusher, but also could possibly give you some snaps at Sam linebacker. And so I'm really intrigued by him. And you know me, Corbin, I always got to give a little bit of love to the Pacific Northwest. Hemeka Rasheed Jr. from Oregon State is another one who has really similar size to Bruce Irvin. You mentioned Irvin before and got me thinking about Rasheed. He's 6'2", 251. When the Seahawks drafted Bruce Irvin, he was 6'3", 251. The fact that they both had incredible production off the edge, and then again with Rasheed, is very similar to Snow, who I mentioned before, had a lot of plays this past season actually in coverage rather than rushing the passer. And that type of positional versatility, I think, is going to be very intriguing to the Seahawks.
Rasheed doesn't have quite the athletic traits based on his pro day workout. His three cone drill and short shuttle don't come close to what Bruce Irvin did coming out of West Virginia. But that being said, we don't see many players of that size that put up testing numbers like Bruce Irvin did before the draft. That's why the Seahawks picked him in the first round. And a lot of people were like, why'd you pick this guy in the first round? The athletic traits just popped up. But Rasheed is definitely a player that you look back at his 2019 production. He had kind of a down year in 2020, but 2019 put up some big numbers. He is a player that I think could, like Ellerson Smith, maybe be a Sam linebacker, Leo hybrid. And we know the Seahawks love versatility. Most likely where the Seahawks would take an edge rusher, though, this is especially if they add picks as we expect, would be late in this draft. And again, I don't think it's a great defensive end edge rushing class. There's not a ton of depth, but there may be a few guys in the later rounds that are worth taking a flyer on. And for me, I'm going to go with a player. It's odd. We talked about Kerry Hyder. And when I watch Wyatt Hubert out of Kansas State, that's kind of the player that I see, because Hubert is not going to blow you away with his athletic metrics, his testing. He's not a flashy player, but he plays with 110% effort every play, an incredible motor. He was really productive for the Wildcats. Every time I watched Kansas State on TV, I kept wondering, who is this kid? He doesn't look like he would be a great football player, but he is really a really solid player that I think is going to be available late on day three, because he doesn't have a flashy skill set, not overly athletic, but he compensates for it with his motor and his technique. So I see a lot of Kerry Hyder. In fact, he's 6'3", 270. He is pretty much the same build as Kerry Hyder. So you've got Hyder, who's going to be 30 years old in May. He's probably not a long-term option to that position. Maybe you can draft Hubert, and now you got another guy that you can develop that can be in that mold, that can play your five-tech position, can reduce inside on pass rushing downs. That would be pretty good value in the seventh round.
It absolutely would. I mean, we've been talking about some of these guys who are just fantastic athletes, but you mentioned two of my absolute favorite defensive linemen in this draft class in Wyatt Hubert, and then earlier when you mentioned Carlos Boogie Basham from Wake Forest. I mean, these are two guys that are not the high-end athletes as, you know, the guys that we were talking about before, the Tryons, the Oways, even Ellerson Smiths, all right? But in terms of just football players, Boogie Basham and Wyatt Hubert are absolutely better players than the other guys that we've mentioned. They're the better athletes. They're going to get drafted earlier. But as far as guys who you want to go to war with today, you want to play some football right now, that Wyatt Hubert, if he is somehow available in the seventh round, and I think he could be, because you're absolutely right. I mean, NFL teams just fall in love with the traits, and Wyatt Hubert does not have traits. He's a short, stubby guy. He's got short arms. He doesn't have the great 40-yard dash or the vertical jump or any of those kind of traits. But you put it on the tape, and all you do is watch this guy and just marvel and get your popcorn ready. He is. He's terrific. I mean, and nobody could stop him. He was the whole focus of the opposing, offensive coordinators, what they're trying to do, and they couldn't stop Wyatt Hubert. And, you know, oh, by the way, Seattle's had some success with Kansas State in the past, of course, with Tyler Lockett. And so I think all of those different things, we talk a lot about, like, say, the University of Iowa and Kirk Ferentz. What Bill Snyder helped create at Kansas State is just a different level of accountability and responsibility. And so Wyatt Hubert, I think, would be a great selection for some club, including the Seahawks, if he were available that late. I'm going to go with another one of those elite athletes that, in Joshua Kando from Florida State, another one who's a 6'5", 260-pounder. I mean, comes off the bus, and you're like, oh, my goodness, look at this guy. Unfortunately, he's really struggled with injuries. He's a long, lean guy. And like a lot of long, lean guys, he struggled with leg injuries where he gets cut all the time. And so, again, he's as raw as it gets. But at the same time, we know the Seahawks, they've often gambled on elite athletes late in the draft and just see if they can, turn chicken salad into, or however that expression goes, and so that's the thing, is that I really think that Kando is a guy who has that type of talent. I was was a big fan of another Florida State pass rusher, Josh Sweat, a couple of years ago, and he's wound up sticking along with the Eagles and flashing that talent. I think that Kando is going to do the exact same thing. Somebody's going to draft him late. He's going to stick around for a couple of years, and he may wind up having a big impact in the NFL.
You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Follow Locked On Seahawks on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and the all-new Audacy app. That's AUDACY. Coming up on our Thursday show, I'll be taking a look at my top five remaining players Seattle should consider in the latter stages of free agency. Plus, we'll look at tight ends in our draft preview. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Thanks for listening in. Go Hawks.